Welcome to this new detailed edition of the BayPay Forum Blockchain News. My name is Cindy and today is October 21, 2019. This edition is brought to you by Paycademy, the first business academy to learn payments and fintech. If you have some news in payments and fintech, send it to us at press@baypayforum.com and we will do our best to include your news. In this edition, we will talk about Binance CEO, Russian ruble to be first fiat crypto trading option. Major Korean banks join government-backed blockchain ID initiative. Binance announces ruble trading at Russian gov-sponsored event. Libra could drop basket and issue individual fiat stablecoins. Bitfinex files for subpoena in bid to recover $880 million in frozen funds. Bitcoin's 3% price rise neutralizes bearish setup. As Lightning's economy takes shape, devs are split on proposed fee hike. Researchers uncover Bitcoin attack that could slow or stop Lightning payments. It's not time to write Libra's crypto obituary just yet. Now let's get started. Binance CEO, Russian ruble to be first fiat crypto trading option. Cryptocurrency exchange Binance is soon to launch its first fiat to cryptocurrency trading pairs. Speaking at the Open Innovations 2019 conference in Moscow on Monday, CEO Changpeng CZ Zhao confirmed that fiat options are on the way, kicking off with the Russian ruble. "We're adding support for fiat trading. In about 2 weeks or so, we should have support for Russian ruble trading, direct. Until now, the company's primary service, Binance.com, has only supported crypto-to-crypto trading. However, it has launched local fiat gateways in Uganda, Singapore, Jersey and, most recently, the US. Binance had said in September that fiat payments were coming for over-the-counter OTC trading, effectively, bulk deals this month. However, his comments today appear to indicate that general trading on the exchange will also support the new options. Also announced by the exchange on Monday, a new token pegged to the value of the Bitcoin Cash (BCH) cryptocurrency has been listed on its decentralized exchange, Binance DEX. Binance said its BCH1FD token would bring more options for DEX users. Major Korean banks join government-backed blockchain ID initiative. Four more major institutions including the Shinhan and NH Nonghyup banks have joined a South Korean decentralized identity initiative that's aimed to secure and share personal information using blockchain. According to a report from CoinDesk Korea on Sunday, the program, which was first released in July, is now officially named as the Initial DID Association. Besides Shinhan and NH banks, two major payment processors BC Card and Hyundai Card have also joined the program as of late, bringing the total number of participants to 11. The consortium now includes Samsung Electronics, KEB Hana Bank, Woori Bank, as well as Korea's three major mobiles carriers SK Telecom, KT and LGU+. It also includes Coscom, an IT company 76.6% owned by the Korea Exchange. The project, which is backed by the Ministry of Science and ICT and the Korea Internet and Security Agency, KISA, aims to develop a mobile product that will allow for the secure storing of personal identification information with blockchain technology. Users of the system will be able to prove their identities for online transactions and for the validation of qualifications or credentials. Initial will be used at first for certificates from six Korean universities, as well as for English test scores. It will then be expanded to the submission of loan application documents, such as income tax withholding and loan certificates. According to the earlier reports, the system is expected to be up and running in 2020. While the project is expanding, competition in the blockchain identity space is also increasing. On October 14, the Korea Financial Telecommunications and Clearings Institute, KFTC, a payment settlements organization, said that it will have its own mobile ID solution using blockchain up and running by the end of the month, according to a report in the Donga Ilbo. Binance announces ruble trading at Russian Gov-sponsored event. Binance, one of the largest global crypto exchanges, will soon add support of fiat trading, starting with the Russian ruble. Adding ruble support in about 2 weeks. The news was publicly announced by Binance CEO Changpeng Zhao, CZ, at a Russian government-led event, the Open Innovations Forum in Moscow on October 21. By adding Russia's national cryptocurrency on its platform, Binance will allow users from Russia to buy cryptocurrencies directly using rubles, CZ explained. In a video posted on Twitter, CZ said, "In about 2 weeks or so, we should have support for Russian rubles trading directly. So you can buy cryptocurrencies on Binance.com using rubles." The news comes as the crypto industry is still not officially regulated in Russia, as the government has allegedly again delayed the adoption of the country's major crypto bill on digital financial assets, as reported in mid-October. 4 international crypto fiat exchanges launched. In January 2019, Binance was first reported on its plans to expand to 8 new countries in 2019, including Singapore, Malta, South Korea, Liechtenstein, Argentina, Russia, Turkey, and Bermuda. To date, Binance has already launched 4 international crypto fiat exchanges, including Binance Uganda, European trading platform Binance Jersey, Binance Singapore, and Binance US. On October 18, Binance US announced that its customers' dollar deposits were eligible for Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, also known as FDIC, insurance coverage. In mid-October, Binance launched peer-to-peer trading for Bitcoin, BTC, Ether, ETH, and Tether, USDT, against the Chinese yuan. Libra could drop basket and issue individual fiat stablecoins. The Facebook-led Libra project may consider a fundamental change to the way its planned global payments system will operate, according to its chief. Speaking at a banking seminar, according to a Reuters report on Sunday, co-creator of Libra David Marcus said that the firm could consider dropping the currently planned synthetic stablecoin, which is to be pegged to a basket of fiat currencies and government bonds, and instead issue a number of individual coins pegged to national fiat currencies such as the dollar, pound, and euro. He told the panel, "We could definitely approach this with having a multitude of stablecoins that represent national currencies in a tokenized digital form. That is one of the options that should be considered." Marcus told Reuters that the new path isn't necessarily Libra's desired option, but that the project needs to be agile. That presumably in the face of kickback from global regulators who have almost to a voice condemned the project as a threat to financial stability and monetary policy, and a financial crimes risk. A number of lawmakers, including in the US and the EU, have demanded that the project doesn't launch until these issues are addressed. Libra for its part has said it is working with regulators and designed its launch timeline to allow such concerns to be addressed. It has further pushed back on claims it is a threat to nations' monetary sovereignty. Why Libra would shift away from its currently planned structure for the token wasn't stated in the Reuters report. Among possible issues, it has been suggested previously that the reserve backing the basket could be classed as a security and hence come under the remit of regulators like the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC. Former Commodity Futures Trading Commission, CFTC, Chairman Gary Gensler made that argument in July, saying, "As currently proposed, the Libra Reserve, in essence, is a pooled investment vehicle that should at a minimum, be regulated by the SEC, with the Libra Association registering as an investment advisor." In a recent setback for the project, a number of big-name firms such as Visa and MasterCard left the project on October 11, soon after being sent letters from U.S. lawmakers threatening regulatory reprisals if they did not do so. Libra is still sticking to its launch timeline of mid-2020 amid all the regulatory problem-solving. Marcus told Reuters, "We'll see. That's still the goal. It's not entirely up to us." Bitfinex files for subpoena in bid to recover $880 million in frozen funds. Bitfinex has applied to a U.S. court to subpoena a former banking executive of a trust company that the crypto exchange believes can help it recover over $850 million in frozen funds. The exchange submitted a filing on October 18 to a court in California for obtaining the permission to take the deposition testimony of Rondell Ron Clyde Monroe, a former vice president of TCA Bancorp. It also seeks to obtain documentations of Monroe's communication with crypto capital staffers. Bitfinex alleges in the filing that Crypto Capital has used one or more accounts held at TCA Bancorp to facilitate the transfer of funds belonging to itself and believes Monroe has information and documents vital to their claims to over $850 million. Bitfinex's filing comes as part of the ongoing proceedings where it seeks to recover $880 million of its funds held at its payment processor Crypto Capital that was said to be frozen by multiple government agencies. Meanwhile, Bitfinex is also under investigation by the New York Attorney General's office for allegedly using a loan from its sister company Tether to cover up the frozen funds without disclosing to customers. Bitfinex said in the filing that its relationship with Crypto Capital operated generally well until April last year when news emerged that funds at Crypto Capital had been seized by authorities in Poland due to money laundering investigation. Bitfinex said that in August 2018, Crypto Capital told it that about $500 million of its funds in both Poland and Portugal were being held up by regulators in the two countries. The exchange added that after being pressured to provide more information concerning the frozen banking accounts, Crypto Capital provided a reference letter signed by Monroe from TCA. The letter presented the custody of a little over $300 million of Bitfinex's funds at TCA on behalf of a customer called Global Trade Solutions AG, GTS, doing business as Crypto Capital. As such, Bitfinex is applying to take deposition testimony of Monroe, as well as documentations of his communication with Ozzy Yosef, a principal at Crypto Capital, Yosef's sister Ravid Yosef, Reginald Dennis Fowler, a sole shareholder of GTS, as well as Fowler's son Trent Dennis Fowler, who is said to be the registered holder for at least one account used by Crypto Capital to receive deposits from Bitfinex customers. Notably, Reginald Fowler and Ravid Yosef have been indicted by the U.S. Department of Justice for alleged bank fraud charges in connection to a system for depositing funds to cryptocurrency exchanges. Bitcoin's 3% price rise neutralizes bearish setup. View: Bitcoin has again bounced up from $7,800 support, neutralizing the immediate bearish setup. A break above $8,820 is needed to invalidate the lower highs setup and confirm a bull reversal. A bullish close, if confirmed, would open the doors for $9,320 August 29 low. Bitcoin's price bounce has shed some of the recent bearish pressure, but there's still a way to go before a bullish reversal is confirmed. After hitting $8,314 on Sunday, the top cryptocurrency by market value is now trading around $8,200 on Bitstamp, representing a 3% gain on a 24-hour basis. BTC was operating on slippery grounds last week with the Chaikin Money Flow Index, used to gauge buying and selling pressure, reporting the strongest bearish bias in 8 months. The downside, however, was restricted near $7,800 on Friday and prices bounced back above $8,000 over the weekend. The latest bounce from that level is the fifth since September 26 and indicates seller exhaustion. The immediate bearish case, therefore, stands neutralized. Other key indicators like the relative strength index are also reporting early signs of a bullish reversal. That said, BTC is yet to invalidate the most basic of all bearish technical indicators, a lower high, lower low, as seen below. BTC fell 3.69% on October 11, marking a failure above the 200-day moving average (MA) and establishing a bearish lower high at $8,820. A bearish lower high is essentially a shallow bounce that usually ends up recharging engines for a drop below recent lows. The latest bearish lower high failed to challenge the low of $7,714 created on September 30, a sign the sellers have run out of steam. A bullish reversal, however, would be confirmed only if BTC prints a higher high above the October 11 high of $8,820. So, with prices currently around $8,200, a bearish to bullish trend change is still $600 away. BTC rose above $8,100 on Sunday, confirming an inverse head and shoulders breakout bullish reversal pattern on the hourly chart above left. The breakout was backed by an uptick in trading volumes and looks to have legs. Further, the falling channel breakout seen on the 4-hour chart indicates the path of least resistance is to the higher side. Hence, a rally to the bearish lower high of $8,820 cannot be ruled out. On the downside, $7,800 is the level to beat for the bears. A UTC close below that level will likely be followed by a slide to $7,200-$7,000, as suggested by the bearish weekly chart indicators. As Lightning's economy takes shape, devs are split on proposed fee hike. Fees aren't just a topic of discussion for Bitcoin users anymore. As the tech matures and an economy develops, fee discussions are making their way into the Lightning network too. This past weekend, Bitcoiners and Lightning fanatics gathered in an industrial Berlin sector for the first ever Lightning conference. With topics ranging from onboarding and interface design to the vogue economics of the nascent payment layer, Lightning conference attendees said the event had the feel of Bitcoin's early days. However, Lightning isn't quite new. When it first debuted following its release of the white paper in 2015, three major teams sprung up among a sea of hobbyists: Eclair, C Lightning, and Lightning Labs. Over the two-day conference, questions over wallet design and Lightning apps were joined by concerns over the network's next steps given its relative explosion over the past year. One such question was default fees, the minimum price to send a payment through a Lightning network channel. Currently, default fee settings scrape the bottom of the barrel at 1 Satoshi plus 1 parts per million or 0.000001% of the payment. In a word, insignificant. 1 Satoshi, a 100 millionth of a Bitcoin, is worth around $0.0000825 at press time. Node operators have the option to raise the basic fee, yet historically the baseline hasn't deviated much. Blockstream's C Lightning Rusty Russell pointed out that some two-thirds of nodes don't charge over the default. To spur the development of a fee market, Russell called for an uptick in the default fee from 1 sats plus 1 ppm to 5 sats and 500 ppm in an October 10 email to Lightning developers. In essence, his proposal would flip the fee market upside down. Nodes would bid down for processing payments as opposed to bidding up. Change is coming. Some level of fee increase is generally seen as necessary in the Lightning community. As Lightning app, LAP, developers and others build on the Layer 2 system, Russell told CoinDesk he has concerns for future developers working on the basis of the current setup. We measure chemicals in parts per million. Somebody coming in new might go, all right, cool, we're going to do one part per million, Russell said. They need a warning that it's going to change, he added. Russell's proposal was seconded by Pierre-Marie Padieu, CEO and founder of ACINQ, the parent company of Lightning company Eclair, in an email. Zap Solutions founder Jack Mahlers also motioned support for the fee bump when asked by CoinDesk. While the change would be small monetarily, other Lightning developers believe a simple fee proposal could negatively affect the project's decentralized image. The wrong notion? As part of the Bitcoin universe, Lightning has co-opted Bitcoin's enthusiasm for individual sovereignty and free markets. Understanding Russell's proposal within the context of the network, then, becomes political. Would the big three Lightning developers be setting a precedent by changing the default fee? And if so, what are the implications? Lightning Labs CTO Olaoluwa Osuntokun came out strongly against the proposal, which he believes could easily be taken out of context, saying this post promotes the notion that somehow in Lightning, developers decide on fees, in an October 11 response to Russell's proposal. The operators set the fees. If the fees are too high, they don't get paid. That's the market, he said. Osuntokun told CoinDesk that education initiatives matter more and developers should steer clear of topics rife for misrepresentation. Lightning Labs CEO Elizabeth Stark agreed, telling CoinDesk that the fee market should develop from the ground up, not top down. I don't think developers should be changing these defaults, Stark said. I think the fee market will emerge. It's going to have to professionalize. At the end of the day, it's still early for the Bitcoin payment solution. Mahlers told CoinDesk the overhead for participating in the network remains low and, default fee increase or not, the network is heading in the right direction. The cost of getting on the network and routing is downloading free software on a laptop, he concluded. Researchers uncover Bitcoin attack that could slow or stop Lightning payments. The Bitcoin Lightning Network could be vulnerable to a simple and disruptive attack, according to a recent research paper. Written by Sar Tochner, Aviv Zohar, and Stefan Schmid, the paper describes a denial-of-service (DOS) attack that could be used to slow down or even stop a huge percentage of payments on the network and, although the behavior hasn't been seen in the wild and Lightning's technology is still in progress, it's considered a major flaw in the network as it stands today. The paper, entitled Hijacking Routes in Payment Networks, was published in mid-September. Tochner and Zohar both hail from the Hebrew University of Jerusalem while Schmid works at the University of Vienna. The attack allows for a disruption of payments on the Lightning Network, said Zohar. This is possible because each Lightning Network payment is passed across a network of nodes in order to reach its destination. If one of these middle nodes is a bad actor, it can slow the payment down rather than swiftly pass along the payment as it's supposed to. What's more, it currently doesn't take much to execute the denial-of-service attack, according to Zohar. It is extremely easy to execute. It takes opening a few Lightning channels to key points, promising zero fees, and then not relaying any payments, he said. It's an attack that the researchers haven't seen in the wild, but it could potentially make the Lightning payment network more difficult to use. And it's a discovery that has gotten the attention of developers who work on Bitcoin and Lightning. I wish I had thought of the attack, Bitcoin researcher Gleb Naumenko told CoinDesk. The paper is very interesting, so is the analysis of the different heuristics used for pathfinding, and we're very happy to see independent researchers work on how Lightning can be abused and attacked, said Lightning startup Async CTO Fabrice Druin. Amplified denial of service. When a user sends a payment across Lightning, their app decides which path to take based on many factors, including which node requires the lowest fees. Though there are hundreds of nodes in the Lightning network, a bad actor can use this attack to make sure there's a high probability that their node will be selected. They can do this by analyzing how each implementation computes routes to design a strategy that enables attackers to get their nodes selected in as many routes as possible, said Druin. We can open channels that offer short and low-cost routes in the network which then are selected, almost always, for the route, Zohar further explained. By doing this, they can capture a significant portion of the network's payments at a given time. We find that just 5 new links are enough to draw the majority, 65%-75%, of the traffic regardless of the implementation being used, the paper explains. What's more, they can do this over and over again to ensure the payment keeps getting stopped. Then, when a payment request comes in, we can just refuse to pass it onward. When a new path is selected, the attacker channels are again selected for the route, Zohar said. As bad as the attack sounds, it hasn't appeared in the wild yet. I think the network is just not in heavy use right now and disrupting it does not cause too much damage. The attack does not directly give funds to the attacker, so the incentive will only be there if Lightning is heavily used as a payment network, Zohar said. It should be noted that, for the attacker, such a maneuver is not cheap, Druin argues, because attackers need to open actual channels and lock funds, which will get closed and pay on-chain fees whenever a payment is locked and times out. Still, Zohar argues it's not that expensive, given the damage you do, adding, you'd need around 20 or so new channels to attack some 80% of all transactions, so the total cost would be around $2,000. Stopping the attack. Lightning developers agree this is a serious attack vector, but they are optimistic that future changes will make the attack much harder. It's something that's hard to talk about because we are still developing the pathfinding system in LND and it's a moving target, said Alex Bosworth, who is the infrastructure lead at Lightning Labs. LND is an implementation of Lightning Network made by Lightning Labs. Bosworth further noted that changes are coming in fast, and that the new version of LND that just came out on Tuesday, for example, has some major changes that impacts the routing analyzed by the researchers to come up with this attack. I wouldn't say that there is any way to conclusively stop people who are trying to disrupt payments, because this is a system where the peer-to-peer design means that anyone can participate and route or not route as they prefer, he said. Trampoline payments. The Lightning Code is changing very rapidly, and there are plenty of modifications still in the pipeline. Some of these changes could make it a lot harder for bad actors to execute an attack, Lightning developers argue, including system for banning bad users. Also, as the network grows, Lightning network implementations will deploy more aggressive heuristics to ban misbehaving peers, and such attacks will become more and more short-lived, Druin said. For example, we don't just look at the cheapest fees when we compute routes, we try to select older channels, so an attacker would have to wait and behave before they can carry out the attack, he said. Druin further argued that there are other improvements forthcoming, including trampoline payments, a feature proposed by Blockstream Lightning developer Christian Decker, who was known for independently inventing a payment channel network similar to Lightning in 2015. Lightning is supposed to be instant, but behind the scenes each node in the network carrying a payment from point A to point B needs to do a little computation as it carries the data. In fact, not all Lightning users have equipment that's powerful enough to perform these calculations, thereby requiring the trampoline system. The typical user in today's network might send a Bitcoin payment from a smartphone, for instance, which isn't exactly a powerful machine. So one idea is to allow these smaller nodes to outsource computation to trampoline nodes that have more computational power. It's not time to write Libra's crypto obituary just yet. To paraphrase Mark Twain, rumors of the nation-state's demise are greatly exaggerated. The exits of MasterCard, Visa, PayPal, and four other firms from the Libra consortium came after France and Germany moved to block the global stablecoin cryptocurrency project and after US lawmakers delivered stern warnings to Libra members. This was more than a major setback for Libra founder Facebook, it was also a reminder that government power remains unrivaled. 10 years into the Bitcoin revolution, it remains extremely difficult to challenge the state's monopoly over money. Yet Libra obituaries are way too premature. The Libra Association still got 21 of its original 28 member entities to sign onto the Currency Management Consortium in Geneva last week. And even if Libra doesn't survive, other, less controversial players than Facebook are hatching their own stablecoin plans. If those fail, well always have Bitcoin. That said, regulatory resistance is formidable. Last week, both the Financial Action Task Force and the Bank of International Settlements pronounced that stablecoins such as Libra pose a major threat to anti-money laundering (AML) efforts, financial stability, and monetary competition. Meanwhile, some experts, including former Commodities and Futures Trading Commission Chief Gary Gensler, have argued that Libra should be regulated as a security. But none of that means stablecoins aren't destined for big things. The technology's ongoing momentum, coupled with geopolitical and global economic imperatives, suggests governments will ultimately have to embrace them or compete with them. As Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas President Rob Kaplan said last week, sooner or later somebody's going to figure out how to do this. Libra has been a vital driver of that momentum, having spurred international debate on the topic and galvanized developer and business interest in tokenized money. In turn, it owes a debt of gratitude to Bitcoin, the first cryptocurrency, which offers an altogether entirely independent alternative to fiat currencies. Without Bitcoin's success, none of this would be happening. It's just that when it specifically comes to stablecoins, whatever mainstream solution emerges from this chaotic early phase will require direct coordination with governments. I am talking more of reserve-based stablecoins, whether basket-pegged cryptocurrencies like Libra or one-on-one offerings like USDC or Gemini Dollar, not of smart contract-based, collateralized tokens like DAI. Libra and its imitators will need to hold lengthy sit-downs with regulators, compromise on some elements of their design, and help the agencies get comfortable with those parts they can't change. The way forward. First, all is definitely not lost for Libra. The Libra Association has the blessing of Switzerland's Financial Market Supervisory Authority, FINMA, giving it a respected, regulated home base from which to develop the project. From herein, it will be deeply focused on regulatory compliance. While the association's resources and lobbying clout would have been greater with MasterCard and Visa on board, its pockets are deep enough to fund ongoing, constructive negotiations with authorities in different countries. Even if Libra has to be rolled out piecemeal, with some countries' citizens gaining access and others not, increasingly sophisticated geofencing techniques should prevent those in less friendly jurisdictions from getting their hands on it. If it lowers cross-border transaction costs in those places and enables new forms of smart contract-based commerce, and if it introduces new digital identity models to cheaply but securely include poorer people in finance, pressure will rise on the other countries to ease restrictions. Libra has some powerful advocates. One is Terry Goh, owner of electronics giant Foxconn, which has business relationships with tens of thousands of manufacturers worldwide. The one-time Taiwanese presidential candidate recently called on his country to accept Libra, arguing that it could be a bridge to China's forthcoming digital currency. Although some developing countries, such as India, are hostile to Libra and other cryptocurrencies, others are aggressively pursuing them as solutions to their citizens' financial challenges. These include Caribbean countries, which suffer from costly cross-border transactions and de-risking by foreign banks for whom tighter U.S. compliance requirements have led them to curtail correspondent banking relationships with institutions in such countries. Bermuda recently said it will accept tax payments in the stablecoin USDC. And the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank, which handles monetary policy for 9 countries, is experimenting with a blockchain-based central bank digital currency. The Caribbean is a much smaller fish than India, of course. But it punches way above its weight financially. Over the years, the region's island nations have used tax breaks and other carrots to attract the world's biggest banks, insurance firms, mutual funds, and hedge funds, which now collectively manage almost $1 trillion in financial assets there. Also, its smaller population makes an ideal testing ground. Moreover, Libra may find support in the UK, whose all-important banking industry sees fintech development as key to its post-Brexit survival. When Governor Mark Carney said in June that the Bank of England planned to grant liquidity access to tech companies a break with the tradition of bank-centric monetary management, it was Libra, which had only just gone public with its plan, that he had in mind. The race to innovate. If London strides ahead with stablecoin innovation, where does that leave other financial centers such as New York and Hong Kong? Many U.S. officials worry that financial innovators could abandon U.S. shores if Washington's stance is too hard-line. Last week, Senator Mike Rounds, RSD, wrote a supportive letter to Libra members in which he described the threatening missives that Senators Brian Schatz, D. Hawaii, and Sherrod Brown, D. Ohio, sent to MasterCard, Visa and Stripe as ominous and warned of regulatory overreach putting a chill on innovation in the U.S. Meanwhile, geopolitical tensions and economic uncertainty will eventually pressure governments to seek alternatives to their current approach to money. China is developing its own digital fiat currency, which could give its economy trade advantages and reduce its dependence on dollars. Another challenge, as the global economy weakens, the burden of trillions of dollars in private and public debt will pose a troubling threat to Western economies, raising fears of a rush into dollars and a countervailing collapse in competing currencies. Speaking on the Hidden Forces podcast, famed investment strategist Raoul Pal argued that a denationalized digital basket-based currency such as Libra might enable countries to avoid the harm of a currency war and continue trading with each other as they negotiate debt write-downs with their creditors. Libra successors? Whether the answer lies in the basket-based solution, in one-on-one fiat currency pegged tokens, or with direct central bank-issued digital currencies, Facebook and its fellow Libra members are far from the only major companies looking to cash in on the promise of stablecoins. Freed of Facebook's reputational baggage, these companies are betting that they're in a stronger position to negotiate with government authorities. One weighty player exploring a Libra-like project is retailing giant Walmart, the biggest employer in the U.S. and, like Foxconn, the central entity in a giant global supply chain. As for MasterCard, do not read its departure from Libra as a departure from cryptocurrency and blockchain development. Having recently expanded its hiring of blockchain experts, the card and payments network provider could be positioning itself as an important player in the nascent stablecoin industry, one with tight relationships with government figures around the world. "It's not that we don't think Libra has long-term value, or no longer has merit," said Vice President of Digital Solutions Jorn Lambert when I asked him to explain the 11th-hour departure from Libra. "It's that they were asking original founding members to become formal members inside a legal entity, at a time when the regulatory framework is very uncertain. We don't actually understand entirely the implications of membership. We want to wait for regulators to have clarified that framework before we take on this liability." Lambert said that MasterCard's future steps will be shaped around a public-private partnership. He even envisaged a scenario in which central banks would mint and burn outgoing and incoming tokens, while private firms with retail customer experience like MasterCard would handle distribution and customer protections. "The very idea of a partnership with government will have a certain class of cryptocurrency advocates retching. But the good news for them is that this is not a zero-sum game. The creation of fiat-backed digital currencies will, I believe, elevate Bitcoin's status beyond that of gold as the key uncorrelated safe haven for avoiding political risk. It's just that until native cryptocurrencies achieve their own internal stability, scalability and widespread adoption, an instantly scalable currency with a stable value is needed if the mainstream economy is to embrace programmable money. The lesson from Libra is that it also has to be government-friendly." This concludes our edition for today. We want to thank again Paycademy, the first business school to learn payments and fintech, for their support. You can find more information on their website at paycademy.com. We hope you enjoyed it and see you tomorrow for our next edition.